Even before last week's announcement of Solicitor General Elena Kagan as President Barack Obama's Supreme Court nominee, a whisper campaign had been started in speculating her sexual orientation. A former Bush administration aide and Republican Senate staffer had written in a CBS News blog last month that Obama's then-probable selection of the former Harvard Law School dean to be the, quote, first openly gay justice would please his political base of supporters. The Obama White House has vehemently denied the charges. CBS initially defended the blog post and then deleted it in the days following after the author, Ben Domenech, admitted that it was just a rumor. The subject of Kagan's sexual orientation once again became a flashpoint for media discussion as the Wall Street Journal published a front-page story on the Supreme Court nominee with an accompanying picture of her playing softball in 1993 while teaching at the University of Chicago. Gay rights advocates accused the newspaper of playing to a popular allusion between the sport and lesbianism. Another Rupert Murdoch-owned publication, the New York Post, picked up on the story by running a headline asking, "Does this photo suggest High Court nominee Elena Kagan is a lesbian?" Critics say all insinuations in the media, such as those in the Wall Street Journal and other newspapers, are irrelevant and serve only right-wing detractors who promote them over legitimate legal questions. To date, the Solicitor General has never claimed to be a lesbian or even a gay rights advocate. My guest is Richard Kim. He's a senior editor at The Nation magazine. Welcome to Uprising.
Hi, Sonali. Nice to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. Now, in your piece in The Nation entitled Elena Kagan is Not Gay, you take a look at Andrew Sullivan of The Atlantic. Tell us about how he has figured into this whisper campaign, as you described it.
Right. Well, Andrew Sullivan actually is gay and comes at it from, I think, a perspective as a gay rights advocate, really. And it seems to me that he really wants Elena Kagan to be an open out lesbian so that we could have our first gay Supreme Court justice. And he thinks these questions about her sexual orientation are legitimate, that they might impact her decisions she makes, particularly on matters of gay rights, including same-sex marriage, and that the public and the press have a right to know and ask about her sexual orientation. And I really think underlying Andrew's argument is an assumption on his part that she is in fact gay, of which there is no evidence to suggest that she is in fact, other than these rumors and insinuations that have persisted in the press.
So there are so many sort of dimensions to this story. One is that, first of all, it's really nobody's business, right? And second of all, even if she was gay, and even if the right-wing factions in the United States lobbied against her nomination for that reason, those of us progressives would like, I think many of them think that she is not progressive enough, not that she is either gay or too gay or not gay enough. How do you come at this question?
Right. Well, you know, I think it's only an issue if Elena Kagan decides to make it an issue. And if she had decided in the past to be a gay rights advocate, then that would be a part of her career and part of her legal philosophy. And that is something to take into account in the same way that people's work on behalf of minorities or women's rights in the case of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg were a part of the deliberations about her career. Elena Kagan has not done that. She has not actually, in fact, been an outspoken gay rights advocate, even when it comes to the question of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which at Harvard, she prohibited military recruiters from recruiting at the career services offices, but then also allowed them to recruit at the alumni office. So she took a very pragmatic route there and, in fact, just upheld Harvard's anti-discrimination policy. So that's where the whole insinuation that she's a gay rights advocate from the right comes from, that she, in fact, just pursued a policy at Harvard that other faculty members also upheld. Beyond that, there is really the question of her legal philosophy and opinion. And on that, we just don't really know enough. She has been the Solicitor General of the United States, and before that, the Dean of Harvard Law School, before that, in the Clinton administration. And in those capacities, she hasn't really written a lot under her own voice and her own name. And it's these really important questions that I think the press and the Senate should now turn to, and not these assertions about her personal life, which have no bearing, really, on her jurisprudence.
You brought up the issue of minorities. I mean, when one is a person of color, when one is a woman, those are obvious traits that the world judges you by. It's not something you necessarily have a choice, right, to make an issue. You just are a woman of color or not. But sexual orientation is a different sort of minority category. in terms of the fact that some people choose to keep their sexual orientation private and others choose to flaunt it and others choose to reveal it to those who they feel like revealing it to. So can you comment on how this is sort of a different kind of minority category and it makes it very problematic even discussing it, given how the right wing has turned LGBT rights into a flashpoint, a political football in recent years?
Right. Well, you know, to my view, what I wrote is that, you know, the identity gay is something that you choose. It's something that you call yourself and you join a gay community.
Right. As opposed to being a woman.
Right. Elena Kagan has not done that. So you know, there really is no basis to discuss her as a lesbian. She hasn't come out, and we have no evidence to suggest that she, in fact, has a secret life as a lesbian. Mm. The point about minority status is that even in the case of race and gender, these themselves were not the subject of discussion when Ruth Bader Ginsburg went before the court or when Thurgood Marshall went before the Senate. Their work on behalf of the NAACP or the ACLU or women's rights were subjects of discussion. But Justice Ginsburg, gender itself was not considered a qualification or disqualification by the Senate, really, in terms of her capacity to argue in front of or to decide cases. And I think that's the same sort of philosophy that we should take across all these matters, that if the category in question is essential part or even a tangential part of the person's work, then it becomes a legitimate object of consideration. But if it's just something that is in their personal background, that they themselves has not made, you know, a central part of their legal work, then it really falls outside of what should be considered by the Senate in this process.
My guest is Richard Kim, senior editor at The Nation. He's been writing about Elena Kagan and what he calls a whisper campaign that has been out there since she was actually announced as the Supreme Court nominee, and even before that
when she was nominated for Solicitor General.
Right. I'm wondering if you think that her being a woman also invites this increased scrutiny because of the fact that she is not married. She's a woman in her 50s who's not married. And for some conservative older Americans, that's an issue.
Right. I mean, I think that's the fact that she's plays softball, is an older woman who's not married and has a short haircut, seems to me the only criteria by which people actually think that Elena Kagan is gay. And there is a certain degree of misogyny that I think is going on here. Of course, there were also rumors that Justice Souter was gay because he was also unmarried and lived with his mother. And I think what you see here across American culture is this really you know, unwillingness to think of sexuality and gender in a continuum, and to think that people can make different choices, that sex might not be so important to them, that sexuality can change over a lifetime.
Or that marriage might not be so important.
Or that marriage might not be important, or that someone can be married and unmarried and have different sort of constructions of family life. And what you see here at this pinnacle at the Supreme Court is, you know, real sort of, they must be gay or straight, they must be married or unmarried, and as you do at the top of all political life. And that's unfortunate that our conversations have to become so binaristic, really.
It's also interesting to put this whole story in context of the other story in the past week or so, which is Laura Bush's memoir, which has revealed her to actually be somebody who is privately in favor of gay rights. But during the 8 years of her husband's tenure that targeted gay rights, she remained silent.
Yeah, and, you know, it's hard to really take Laura Bush seriously on that matter. Her husband pushed forward a constitutional amendment to prohibit same-sex marriage, and it would have been nice for her to speak out then. You know, you really, I know a lot of people are really praising her for coming out now, but that takes really a minimum amount of courage.
Now, why do you think, what is the motivation here to ask the obvious question of the right wing to speculate this way or to try to start this campaign against Elena Kagan? Because she certainly is no flaming liberal. I mean, she's moderate, and many progressives have spoken out against her, some of her rulings, saying that Obama should have nominated somebody far more progressive than her. So why does the right wing have this issue?
Right. So, well, even the Republicans like Laura Bush and, you know, Ted Olson and, you know, have come out and spoken in favor of same-sex marriage and gay rights, for much of the Republican Party, being in favor of gay rights is automatically puts you in the most left camp you could possibly be in American culture, even though we know that's not true, right? So part of what they're trying to do here by whispering that Elena Kagan is a lesbian or saying explicitly that she's very pro-gay rights, which, again, there's nothing in her background to suggest that she is to paint her as a far left radical. And that, I think, is really going to be the tactic they're going to pursue throughout this process, to really depict her as someone on the fringe of the American left legal world. And that is just so far from the truth. She has really hewed a path of centrism and really of sort of mystery. We don't really know a lot about what she thinks about executive power, what she thinks about even her chosen field of expertise, the First Amendment. And that's why I think it's really important that we now turn substantively to these questions in the confirmation process. What does Elena Kagan think about indefinite detention? What does she think about the, you know, what should happen to the detainees at Guantanamo? What does she think about wiretapping? These are all really crucial issues that people have been raising, and she has not herself spoken on her opinions on these matters.
Now, those who justify inquiring about her sexual orientation say that she would naturally bring it up and make it a point if she does get on the Supreme Court. You know, once she's on the Supreme Court, she has essentially immunity, right? It's a lifelong tenured position, and it's one of the most important positions in American government and powerful positions in American government. And there's this implication, Richard, that I'm sensing that she is just sort of hiding her sexual orientation until she's on the court, and then she's going to come out as openly gay, and she's going to be the sort of Trojan horse for gay rights.
Right, right. You know, I just find that kind of laughable in the sense that it really exactly mirrors what they say about justices' political opinions. That they're worried that people are going to be stealth radicals, and that, in fact, is what sort of happened to the right wing with Justice Souter. So, you know, what really is behind all of this is this question of the justice being something that she does not present herself to be, whether that's on terms of sexual orientation or legal opinion. And I think the clearest way for Elena Kagan to really clear this up herself is to present in front of the Senate and the American public a very clear view of who she is as a legal scholar and as an interpreter of the Constitution.
And that, and you're right in one issue, which is that, and I think those who do critique her on the legal issue are right in not really knowing much about her legal background and her legal opinions, which one hopes is the main issue that comes out during the nomination hearings.
Correct. And, you know, even in the realm of which she's written the most, which is the First Amendment, there's some troubling suggestions there. So, for example, the New York Times looked at her writing and concluded that she would have been in favor, perhaps, of the decision in Citizens United, which gave corporations pretty much unlimited rights to political speech. And, you know, that's a decision that this magazine, The Nation, has objected to. And it's interesting to see, you know, what Elena Kagan does with those kinds of questions should they come up in the confirmation process.
Richard Kim, when Sonia Sotomayor was nominated by President Obama, there was such an enormous firestorm of controversy generated by the right, and some of it was similar to what we're starting to see with Kagan about the sort of Trojan horse type, fear that she's going to, once she's on the court, become this flaming radical for the rights of women and people of color over the rights of white Americans or conservative Americans. Has any of that played out?
You know, I think we're starting to see some of that with Elena Kagan.
No, I mean, has Sonia Sotomayor actually justified any of those fears?
Absolutely, absolutely not in the short time that she's been on the court. You know, that is something that attaches, you know, by the right wing to minorities, and I think it's a deliberate attempt to kind of stoke their base, and they know how this is going to play out beyond just the confirmation process itself. It's a political question, and this is going to run into the, you know, 2010 midterm elections. They're trying to delay the confirmation hearing until the summer. So there is a sort of rebound effect that they really want to come out of this with, and that is really entirely political and not legal itself.
Finally, Richard, was the Wall Street Journal irresponsible in publishing the softball photo of Elena Kagan?
I don't know what other photos were available to them. It seems pretty clear to me that they were intending a kind of a wink and a nod toward, the rumors of her lesbianism. I think it's a great photo, and I think she probably seems like a really serious and good softball player.
Well, Richard Kim, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. We link to your articles in The Nation from our site, uprisingradio.org. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sonali.
Richard Kim, a senior editor at The Nation magazine. And we've been talking about Elena Kagan and the right-wing whisper campaign that's been started about her sexual orientation. Actually, it was started even before she was the Supreme Court nominee of President Obama.